Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
Hey everybody, it's Devin.
And Kate.
Welcome to Med Crimes.
It's a microdose and we're remote again and I hate it.
So real brief, we're remoting again.
We really are.
Because legit, I sound like death.
There's echoes of death in your voice.
I mean, a little bit less than dead, but pretty close to.
No, I mean, death is accurate. I'm so sorry, you're so sick.
You know what I did today? I bought the triple boost immune gummy.
Do we think those work? They probably do. I don't know.
I don't know. There was a good amount of vitamin D, C, zinc, and elderberry in it.
Those sound very immune boosting to me. So you're.
It can't help. It can't hurt. Excuse me. Let's rephrase. Yes. It can't hurt. So anyways, I apologize for the rasp. We're also remote because I'm currently not in my household yet. Knock on wood, thank God. But at work, we have everybody's favorite four-letter word.
No. I hate this.
The Noro.
Ew, this is my least favorite.
It's the most disgusting four-letter word in the history of
healthcare. It literally is a swear.
I mean, maybe not, but still. Yeah. So I'm just trying to keep Kate and our tiny humans healthy.
I do appreciate it. It will go through my household. It always does. It always does at least twice, and it's absolutely miserable.
I haven't brought it home.
Hallelujah.
So this is good. This is good. I have enough of this bronchitis stuffed, for the best of us.
So Devin's sounding extra velvety today. And
we call it sexy.
We do call it sexy. I mean, it's definitely raspy, a sexy raspy situation.
So I'm hanging in there, peeps. Sorry if it's, hurting your ears.
We have just, a little microdose for you guys today. We have gotten innumerable requests to bring coverage on this one particular case. It's something that's really new, and it's just sort of now coming out in the news, and there's a lot that we don't know. So we're going to talk about Dr. Reynaldo Rivera Ortiz Jr., who is the Texas-based anesthesiologist whom on September 19th was arrested for allegedly spiking IV fluid bags with medications, which is allegedly has resulted in cardiac emergencies and even the death of one of his colleagues.
So bold on that word allegedly.
Yes.
Because it's kind of like the few cases of the dentist Schneider.
Exactly.
Or Redonda Vaught, when we were covering these things, they were alleged to have done these.
Exactly. And I'm going to preface it.
So we're just covering what we know to discover the story.
Exactly right.
But we're not accusing him.
So just like Devin said, I'm kind of just prefacing it by saying that he has been accused and arrested and not convicted of anything. And so in my opinion, obviously, he's innocent until proven guilty. And I look forward to sort of following the case and bringing you guys updates as we get new information.
I was going to say it sets up a perfect part
two
when the time comes.
So I'm really just sort of stating the facts that we know, that are coming from the more reputable news outlets and what they're reporting, as in, I'm going to be talking about some witness accounts, video footage, etc. Me stating these facts does not necessarily indicate my opinion on whether or not he's guilty or that I'm insinuating that he is. I am simply stating the facts of the case as we know them now. And I do understand that sometimes, a lot of times, even the reputable media outlets get things wrong. So I'm just throwing that out there. Again, all alleged.
We're just having a discussion.
We are having a discussion.
We're going to have a discussion.
And we wanted to sort of put all of these things that are coming out in the news together to sort of create a little bit of a timeline for you guys so that you know, we know sort of what is being alleged that went down. It is all very interesting and very sad. So with that, we will dive in. So Dr. Reynaldo Rivera Ortiz is a 59-year-old anesthesiologist who, again, is based in Dallas. I don't know a ton about his background, obviously, but I do know that he attended the University of Texas Medical School in Galveston, and he completed his program in 1993. So he's got, you know, 26 years of active practice under his belt. He's a seasoned...
Wait a minute. No, 1993 mm-hmm. is when he graduated?
Is when he graduated from his medical program, and then he went into internship and residency after that.
Oh, I was going to say, because we do realize that's almost 30 years ago.
So he had a period of...
Because we're getting old.
Oh, yes, we're definitely getting old. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right.
In case my voice doesn't, you know, indicate otherwise.
He's been independently practicing as an attending physician for around 26 years. And that is per the state board record. So, again, not much is known or available about, you know, his early life. And I couldn't even really find an old, like, provider summary. You know how on, like, hospital websites there would be, like, a little, like, background about all the providers?
Just a little blurb.
There really was nothing.
Like, if I wanted to, you know, look up an old roommate of mine from college or something, I might find a blurb.
Exactly, yeah. There was really nothing, unfortunately. It looked like a lot of places that he had been employed or...
Maybe they took him down.
I think they definitely took him down because he was no longer present on that website. So... I do know that his most recent incident was not his first encounter with the law, and he's actually been accused at multiple occasions of domestic violence, and he's settled lawsuits over this and even served a short jail sentence, so he was actually convicted at one point of assault. And,
of domestic
issues.
Yeah,
and we'll talk about each thing. Now, according to documents from the state medical board, Ortiz was arrested back in 1995, which is just in the middle of his residency program, over accusations of assault causing bodily injury to a spouse. And the victim was actually Ortiz's wife at the time, who later divorced him after the incident. And the pair did settle. There was a lawsuit. There weren't any charges, but there was a lawsuit, and he settled for an undisclosed amount of money. Then fast forward to September 2005, the board says another female filed an emergency protective order against Ortiz, claiming that he had assaulted her. So lots of things, we're seeing kind of a little bit of a pattern that he's, you know, obviously got some issues with abuse and not treating his partner as well. Now,
what a guy.
Doesn't he sound like a peach? Now, in December 2014, Dr. Ortiz was arrested for assault involving domestic violence with a third woman, according to board records. And the pair eventually did settle for an undisclosed amount of money, again. But all of these the board has records of because any criminal encounter, you know, the medical board needs to be aware of each and everything. Then in 2016, a Collin County...
As they should be. That was a really delayed risk answer.
It's all good.
Thought processing.
You know,
in my
head. It's cold medicine, maybe? Maybe a little bit?
I did already take a dose of NyQuil.
Oh, girl. So we'll get this. We'll get through this.
You know. I'm ready for another dose when
this
is
over. Yes,
ma'am.
I can tell.
Double it
up. June 2016, a Collin County jury found Ortiz guilty of cruelty to a non-livestock animal. So what happened was... this third woman that they had, there was a lawsuit back in December 2014 that Dr. Ortiz allegedly had assaulted. Now, what happened was the domestic incident in 2014 took place like outside, and a neighbor witnessed the entire thing and actually helped that third woman sort of get away from the situation, and also also ended up like being interviewed about it and gave a statement about it, about what she saw. And this really apparently pissed Dr. Ortiz off, and what he did to retaliate was he went over to the neighbor's house and killed their dog.
Shot
their dog in the chest. Isn't that terrible?
What?
So
wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I mean, really. And so he actually was arrested and charged for this and convicted, and he was sentenced to 25 days in the Collin County Jail and given a $4,000 fine. And
That's it?
Yeah, and the Texas Medical Board actually, like, held a hearing on this because he was convicted of something. There was, like, disciplinary action for that. Like, he had to, I believe he had to pay a huge fine, and there was, like, a huge thing about, like, whether they would put stipulations on his medical license about it. But they did not end up restricting his license at all. He just paid some hefty fines and was able to move on.
Wow.
I know. Isn't that wild?
Wow.
So, now, most recently, he's been working as an anesthesiologist at Baylor Scott and White Surgicare Center. And so, looking at their website, it looks like this is mostly an outpatient surgical center, meaning, like, they have six ORs. And
it sounds like a law firm, Baylor Scott and White.
Doesn't it? It's got that.
Like they're like.
So these differ from ORs in hospitals a little bit, as these are ambulatory surgical centers. So they often provide a slew of outpatient surgeries, meaning that, you know, a huge procedure isn't going to be done here. These are relatively minor procedures that people can come in same day, have it done, and then leave at the end of the day.
Take out your gallbladder.
Exactly.
Take out your
exactly,
tonsils.
Exactly. So they would offer services like EGD colonoscopy, GYN procedures, reproductive endocrinology, ENT, ophthalmology.
Yep.
No big scary procedures like CABG or neurosurgeries are happening here.
Goodness.
And the majority of these procedures are likely fairly uncomplicated, and these patients are relatively healthy. So that's important to remember as we continue down this path. So in...
And this is where he was the anesthesiologist.
He was one of multiple anesthesiologists for this Surgicare Center. Yes. Now, there was an incident in August of 2020 where he had failed to meet the standard of care for a patient. So from what I could gather, and records on this are sparse, but from what I could gather, there was a procedure that occurred in November of the prior year at North Garland Surgery Center, where he was previously employed. And according to those board records, Dr. Ortiz had performed anesthesia on a patient who then ended up requiring CPR and emergency care. Again, there's not a lot of medical detail here, but if you go through like the details of the complaint, it looks like he did not initially respond to the patient's deterioration in a timely manner. He failed to document critical events and failed to identify a patient's inadequate oxygenation and ventilation. So it sounds like maybe there was a big hypoxic episode that he didn't maybe respond to quickly, and the patient had a bad outcome because of it. So
didn't adjust the medications Here I am thinking, I was like, oh God, like, so standards of care for an anesthesiologist. I was like, what, did they wake up mid surgery?
Gosh.
You know, something like Grey's Anatomy that you would see on there.
Stranger things have happened, honestly.
Yeah.
So as a result, the board held this big hearing, and he was ordered, there was like a bunch of stuff that happened. So he was ordered to practice only with the use of a monitor. In other words, he could practice like certain higher risk tasks only with a colleague present for a certain period of time. And I think he had to complete a certain number of hours under supervision for that. In addition,
this was after,
this was,
as part of like corrective
yes,
action.
Yes, this was the corrective action from the Texas Medical Board that he had to do. So he had to do a bunch of continuing education. He had to retake a medical jurisprudence exam and pay a $3,000 fine. And at this time, he actually relinquished his privileges at that Garland facility. And this is when he began working for Baylor Scott White Surgicare Center. So that's sort of where we're at, you know, beginning around here. So there is a theory that's floating around that I've seen in a couple of news outlets. And again, this is all speculation, that this, you know, might have been some kind of weird twisted motive for the events that follow. That, you know, he had this big event and was feeling like, well, you know, I don't feel like I did anything wrong. And like, oh, you know, I'll show them that anybody can screw up.
Why? Is there a connection between the current event?
Well, we'll talk about it. You'll see what I mean in a moment.
Okay.
So now we jump to July of 2022. So July of this year, a tragedy occurs at this workplace in that a well-loved and respected colleague of Dr. Ortiz's passes away suddenly. Her name was Dr. Melanie Kaspar. She was a 55-year-old anesthesiologist who was also working at the Surgicare Center. She unfortunately had died at home, having passed away from what was initially thought to have been a massive heart attack. She sounds like such a cool lady. I want to just, like, read a little snippet from her obituary. It says, quote, Mel was a whirling dervish who did nothing at half measure. She wasn't working. When she wasn't working, she was walking her dogs, riding her bike, cooking, and enjoying the company of her friends. She was genuinely and unapologetically herself. She touched more people's hearts than she ever knew. While a heart attack took her away from the world much too soon, her loving heart left a beacon of light in the community. So, I mean, it sounds like she was kind of like a badass and awesome, and it's like so sad that she died so young. So just bear in mind, you know, it's July 2022, this has happened, you know, the staff are devastated because they're like a family there.
And to just have a colleague just
drop
just,
dead.
Like, die suddenly from
exactly.
a heart attack, like just boom, at work one day, not
exactly.
the next.
Exactly, it's just, yeah. when that happens, you know, it's just devastating mm-hmm. for everybody.
Absolutely.
So, now to set the scene, in surgical centers, fluids, IV fluids that are used during procedures are often kept in a warmer because temperature control in an anesthetized patient is critically important. Their body temperature can easily drop due to the anesthesia medications and the very, very cold temperatures in the rooms and the fact that they're like naked and, you know, splayed out on the table. They lose a lot of heat that way. So hypothermia, hypothermia is an issue that, you know, everybody has to really be very mindful of. So oftentimes when they give IV fluids, they keep them in the warmer so as not to further drop body temperatures during procedures.
Right.
So these fluid warmers look like big stainless steel refrigerators, and they're often kept like in the OR adjacent room, like the clean room, or just right out in the hallway. So most ORs have a place to keep, you know, warmed fluids. Now, of note, Dr. Kaspar had before she passed, had apparently been feeling under the weather from some kind of viral illness, maybe a GI bug. I'm not exactly sure what kind. And the day prior to her passing at work, she had taken a bag of plain IV fluid from a warmer, as well as an IV extension set. And she had taken it home with plans to insert an IV in herself, give herself a bag of fluids, and rehydrate. So, just to, you know, talk...
Which has been controversial in the news.
Exactly.
You know, when they're talking about it, they're like, what do you mean she brought a bag home?
Exactly.
Like, what? Like, that's been controversial.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So... like, this practice is not ideal, right? And, of course, is, like, frowned upon. It is a form of theft, you know? And that being said, I do hear of this being done, like, very often, you know, just to be realistic. And I even know people who have done it. I've never personally done it, but it's, you know, one of those things that sometimes medical people just, like, do as a way to sort of, like, get through an illness. It's kind of seen as, like, a system perk from working in healthcare, you know? And I'm not judging.
But I mean, kind of think about it on the minute level.
Sure.
You know, going up at a nursing home and saying, hey, can I have some Tylenol?
Yeah, well, exactly.
At the med cart.
We do similar things.
That's a minute level.
Exactly. This is exactly that same thing. So because there's been a lot of commentary online about, like, what was she thinking? Is that legal? It seems so sketchy. And why would she do that? And while it sounds kind of weird to people not in the medical field, just know that it's not actually that weird, and a lot of people actually do that.
She was probably just like, you know what, this one bag of fluids
like,
is going to rehydrate
me. I'm
going to
feel better, and I'll be able to come to work tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, that it's something that a lot of people have done. So just...
save me the copay at the doctor's
exactly.
office.
Exactly. It's the perk of working with medical people and working in a medical office.
Right.
So that's just a thing.
It's a wild, not advised to do. It's you're right.
It's just something that happens sometimes.
Yeah. Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait, and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Have you ever wanted to hear the story behind some of the most compelling hauntings in history?
I know I have.
From Amityville to The Conjuring, the Grave Talks podcast takes you there.
Oh, I love that podcast.
Three times a week, Tony Bruschi, host of The Grave Talks, talks to the people who experience shocking paranormal phenomena firsthand. He dives into how the experience affected those who survived it and how it made them who they are today.
It's fascinating, you guys. He creates such a vibe.
What really happened to the Perrin family inside their haunted farmhouse? What was it like investigating side by side with Ed and Lorraine Warren as they stepped foot inside the most infamous Amityville house?
Oh my God, I love them so much.
Freaks me out.
I know.
Hear supernatural stories that you will not find anywhere else, then The Grave Talks.
I am subscribed and I love them.
Search The Grave Talks wherever you download podcasts and press subscribe.
Stat.
Then start binging away on the ghost stories no one ever thought would be told.
Such a great time for this podcast, too, with all the, like, creepy vibes and being September and spookiness. It's Halloween.
That is The Grave Talks. Search for it wherever you download podcasts and press subscribe today.
Stat!
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Now, staff at Surgicare were devastated, obviously, as she was so well-loved, and it seems to have... She seemed to be, like, a very, very healthy person. She exercised a lot. She was very active. She rode her bike a lot. And we know that that doesn't always matter. You know, anybody can have a heart attack, and sometimes it's purely just genetics, and, you know, freak things can right. happen. So, Caspar's family did request an autopsy and toxicology testing to confirm the cause of death, just because she was so otherwise healthy and it was such a shock to everyone. And of course, these things can take...
Fair.
Yeah, valid. Totally valid. And these things can take, like, weeks or months to perform in a normal setting. Right. So, now time rolls on. August comes through. An 18-year-old male patient presents for a routine sinus surgery. During the surgery, the otherwise healthy young man experiences a cardiac arrest right there on the table. And he was intubated and stabilized and transferred to the hospital by ambulance, because remember, they're not in a hospital, they're just in an outpatient surgery right. center.
Yeah.
And he ends up in the ICU right. for several days with no great explanation as to what happened.
Fine after? Yeah,
yes, and he made a full recovery. He was very lucky. And around that same time in August, Dr. Caspar's autopsy report comes back. And surprisingly, the tox screen comes back showing massive amounts of bupivacaine in her system.
Bupivacaine.
So, okay. Bupivacaine is a local anesthetic. It is used as an injection into the skin and sometimes into, like, into joint spaces and into nerves to give nerve blocks. It's okay. also often used as the anesthesia for epidurals, so it would be infused into the epidural space for, like, during childbirth and such.
But not intravenously.
Never intravenously. It's never been intended for intravenous use. When given intravenously, like, say, someone's injecting it and it accidentally enters the vascular system, you know, because someone hits a vein by accident, what happens is it stimulates the autonomic function of the brainstem, which is what controls the critical functions in our bodies, like hemodynamics, blood pressure, heart rate, breathing, you know, very, very important stuff. It can critically raise our blood pressure and our heart rate, causing lethal arrhythmias and sudden death. And actually a study...
Mimicking a heart
exactly.
attack.
Exactly. And it can be extremely sudden. And there was a study that I read that was published in the European Journal of Anesthesiology. And it states that a striking feature of accidental intravenous use of bupivacaine is the difficulty in resuscitating these patients. It's like you'll stabilize yeah. them and then they'll crash and then they'll crash. And it's like they crash right through everything that you do.
Wow.
So,
now, you said that this is one that would be given during with an epidural,
right.
so obviously an anesthesiologist
right.
would have ready access.
100%. It'd be very, very commonplace and very easy to find and very accessible within an OR setting, because nerve blocks are often given as a type of anesthesia during procedures. Also, local anesthesia, all things that anesthesiologists are responsible for. Now, given this new information about Dr. Kaspar's death and this 18-year-old that had a massive cardiac event, staff, you know, all of a sudden red flags are going off. Like, what the heck is going on? So, after this 18-year-old had this event, staff actually had the wherewithal to hold on to the IV fluid bags used during his procedure, and they sent them for testing. And
To the 18-year-old?
Yes, and it's so critically important that they did this, and it's great that they did this.
So wait a minute, just so that I'm following along. So they got those results back at the time that he had just crashed.
He had just crashed, and they said...
So they were able to keep it. They're not.
Yes,
okay.
Because they knew that Dr. Kaspar had taken fluids home. And all of a sudden, this 18-year-old gets fluids and just dies, almost dies inexplicably on
so
the
it's
table.
Like, hey, what's in his
like,
fluids?
Like, is something happening with the fluids? So, the IV fluid bags were tested and contained a, quote, similar drug to bupivacaine. So that could have been any other local anesthetic, like xylocaine or lidocaine or something of the sort, which would have a very similar effect when given intravenously. And it was said of the drug that was found in those IV fluid bags that, quote, such drugs would be fatal when administered unknowingly intravenously. So, obviously, something very dangerous is present in these IV fluid bags.
Has no business
being in there at all. These are plain IV fluids. So, from here, the center, of course, just launches a massive investigation. And they actually went on... in the following days, first of all, they like closed the facility down. There were like no more surgeries.
You got to figure 100% this out. How many bags are contaminated?
Exactly. And like, who's doing this and what's happening? Mm-hmm. Is this a pharmacy issue? Like, is this a manufacturer issue? Mm-hmm. Like, we don't know what's going on. So they close it down, cancel all the surgeries, and they launch this big investigation. And they go on to identify 10 other serious cardiac complications which had occurred between June and August. And
each
of these surgeries would have been totally unremarkable and very simple outpatient procedures. And there was really no explanation for why these people would have done so poorly during their surgery. And they were able to look back...
Unless something was tampered with.
Exactly. And they were able to look back at medical records, and they pored over security footage to try and figure out what was going on. And while there are not cameras inside the operating rooms, there are cameras in the hallways that have right outside the operating room theaters. So footage was identified of Dr. Ortiz on a couple of occasions. So... what I'm reading in news reports,
what was he
allegedly
doing?
He was seen, and I watched this video footage, and it's available widely online. You can certainly Google it. He was seen approaching the fluid warmer and placing bags of IV fluid inside the warmer. And it seems innocuous since, you know, the nice thing to do is to replace a bag of fluids when you take one. But
right.
Also,
restock it.
Also, the anesthesiologists don't routinely do this. Typically, they just take and then the anesthesia techs will replace the fluids and keep it stocked. So it's a little unusual that he would, you know, take a bag and then, you know, go and get it and restock it himself. So once he did that, he's very obvious. He looks around, he scans the empty hallway, and then he walks off. 75 minutes later, a major cardiac event requiring resuscitation occurred in one of those ORs. Yeah. Now, a nurse that worked in the ORs at the time was interviewed, and according to the New York Post, she had reportedly handed him a bag of IV fluid during one of his cases. He asked where she got it. She told him, I got it from the warmer in the hall, and he waved her off and told her to put it back. Like, I'm not giving that to my patient.
What?
Yeah. Like, he knew.
No.
Yeah.
Like, I want the one from the warmer over there in the corner.
Yes, exactly.
Stop.
I know it. So, a second video was found where Dr. Ortiz was seen approaching the warmer with what looked like a package. And what it actually was a bag of IV fluid, which he was trying to conceal in like a manila folder or like a tan folder of some kind.
That's a fat folder.
I know, it's kind of awkward.
I mean, those bags are bulky.
Yeah, super awkward. So he goes up to the warmer and he removes the bag from this folder. He puts the bag in the warmer. He scans the hallway again, like looks around, and then he closes it and leaves. And I know he's not been tried yet. I know that, and I'm only stating what is visible on the footage.
Right.
And I know that, you know, we don't know that for sure if he's guilty or not, but damn, this does not look good. Not gonna lie. I'm just gonna throw that out there. Now, officials at the center immediately contacted authorities once they realized that, you know, they felt like perhaps Dr. Ortiz had something to do with this. And a criminal investigation was launched. So, I honestly, good on them, because I feel like...
I want to know how many hours of footage they have.
So many. I can't even imagine. Was months. It was a period of months that these were occurring. And honestly, like... the facility could have followed in the footsteps of so many that we've talked about and could have just like asked him to quit and erased his file and given him a neutral reference and like let him go practice somewhere else. But they didn't. They were like, I'm calling the cops, which I thought was...
So they finally did what we're always asking a hospital to
100%.
Do.
100%. So, again, all of these operations are paused, right? And the surgeries are canceled. And during this investigation, they would identify several bags of IV fluid that appeared to have been tampered with. And what they saw when they looked at the bags themselves were needle-sized holes in the packaging that the bag comes in from the manufacturer.
The puncture. Yeah. Right.
And then there were also puncture holes in the rubber stopper visible, like little pinholes, like a needle had been stuck into these rubber stoppers and something, you know, allegedly was injected. Now, these bags that appeared to have been tampered with were sent for toxicology testing, and tests revealed that bags with pinholes contained massive doses of bupivacaine and epinephrine. And so the investigation heated up like real quick after this, and it was quickly noted that not one of these emergencies occurred in Dr. Ortiz's ORs during his cases. Not one. Happened to everybody else.
What?
Happened to everybody else but Dr. Ortiz, because he knew where the bad fluids were and he never got the bad fluids for his cases. He wanted to look like a rose. And he wanted everybody else to look really shitty.
So you know what's coming to my mind when a trial eventually comes. A lot of these cases we discovered they had a hard time because they didn't have the evidence of them actually injecting the substance
exactly.
into whatever.
Exactly. You're so right. You know? So
you didn't have that like eyewitness that he put that he was the one. You have him in the hallway. You have weird surveillance tapes. You have all of those things.
Exactly.
You have him at the warmer.
But is it enough?
But you don't have him physically injecting into an IV.
You're
bag.
Absolutely right. Is it enough? That remains
just
to be
seen. Something that's something that has come up on previous episodes that we've done.
You're absolutely right.
Is needing that concrete.
So again, you know, I'm glad I'm not a prosecutor, because proving cases like this beyond a shadow of a doubt is, you know, at times, at least with the information that we have available to us, you know, can seem absolutely impossible.
And maybe they have,
They might, because,
You know, and it's just certain things that we just don't have as
they absolutely
yet.
Might, yeah. So they put this case together, they build it, and then in mid-September of 2022, just this past month, Dr. Ortiz was arrested and taken into custody. Once charges were filed, the medical board was notified, and an emergency suspension of his medical license was carried out pending a hearing. Ortiz attends this detainment hearing next, right, to determine, like, what to do with him in the meantime. And he presents there with a public defender, which is weird because he has, like, a lot of known wealth and resources, and it might just be that, you know, he couldn't find somebody in time and it all was expedited. I'm really not sure. Or maybe it was strategic to you know, gain some sympathy or something.
If you have money, you can find someone.
Oh, you can. So it's probably more of a strategic move than anything else to make it seem like he didn't have the wealth to fly away and take off.
That he's at the mercy of a public
defender. So Ortiz's attorney is federal public defender Laura Harper, And she had argued that Ortiz had strong ties to the community and can no longer practice medicine because his license was suspended. And Harper suggested that Ortiz's daughter would move in with him and notify authorities if he violated any of the conditions of his release. Prosecutor was assistant U.S. Attorney John De La Garza, and he argued that Ortiz is a medical terrorist and a physician sworn to do no harm who was, quote, intentionally planting poison bombs in the IV fluid warmer at Baylor, end quote.
Allegedly. Oh,
thank you, Devin. And the video footage was played during this hearing. He also argued that it was well known that he had substantial wealth, and actually he had like $7,000 in cash on him when he was arrested. And he owned like a $1-something million home and like a lot of luxury cars. It like the guy,
which in Texas is a big home. Yeah.
And I mean, eventually the judge agreed that he was a massive flight risk and still a threat to the public. So if he made bail, he could like just dip. So he was held without bail, and that is where he is right now.
Okay. So then he's in jail
He is in jail, and that is the very latest on the Ortiz case. His trial is set, but has not been scheduled yet. It will likely happen several weeks or months in the future.
I was going to say, we won't talk about it again, I'm sure, for the rest of this
Probably
year.
Probably not. Mm-hmm.
You know, we're almost to the end of 2022, yeah. So, you know. Hey, maybe we get to talk about it next
maybe
year.
Maybe we do, yeah. And that is the latest
maybe we do.
On Dr. Ortiz.
Well, hey, at least we get to kind of talk about something currently that's happening in the news. You know, kind of, again, just like Redonda, it's like, you know, granted, I hadn't heard the story before, and we covered it a week before her trial,
right.
But hey.
Exactly.
We didn't know what was going
to
happen.
We did not. But we just wanted to kind of gather all the information and put it sort of in a concise little format for you guys so that you are all up to speed on the latest and the timeline of events.
Here's what we know now.
And again, all alleged. All alleged.
And correct. It is all alleged. But, you know, we get to learn a little bit about his past, who he is, and not just this doctor that, you know, this anesthesiologist.
Not just the headline. Yeah.
We get to know a little bit more about him.
That's right.
Which... innocent until proven guilty.
Right.
We'll see.
That's absolutely right.
Do, 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 do.
Devin. Yeah. Poor Devin needs to go
I'm
to bed.
In there.
She needs to go to bed, y'all. We got to put this to bed so Devin can take some more NyQuil and go to bed.
Yeah, that'll be my second dose within an hour, so hopefully I sleep good.
Oh my god,
good.
You poor little petunia.
So thank you all for listening. I hope you enjoyed the microdose. If you want to keep listening to us, you can follow us on Instagram at MedCrimesPodcast.
Tweet at us at MedCrimesPC.
You can follow us on Facebook by searching MedCrimesPodcast.
Or if you wish to become a Patreon, you can visit us at www.patreon.com/MedCrimesPodcast.
And don't forget any of those crazy stories, any of your curious questions, or anything that you want to know or anything you want to say. At medcrimes@gmail.com.
We love hearing from you guys on social media. It makes us so happy to chat with you. We love going back and forth. We love our Patreons. We love our listeners. We really appreciate all the positive feedback. Continue to give us likes if you haven't already. And if you haven't left us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or a rate and whatever platform you listen on, that's greatly appreciated as well.
We love all of that. Helps us grow, gets us more exposure. All of that's awesome.
Sure is.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
Till next time.
Until next time.
Stay safe out there.
Bye.
'Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.